Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Tired of being on the performance treadmill? Want to learn how to stop hiding behind the mask of having it all together and start really living? If your answer is a resounding yes, then you'll love my guest today. Emily Freeman has written a book called Grace for the Good Girl, a timely and relevant topic for all of us superwomen out there who are still striving to win God's and everyone else's approval. Emily writes for Dayspring, a division of Hallmark, and has also traveled as a writer with Compassion International to raise awareness for the needs of children in poverty around the world. Emily, welcome to Heartline.
Great. I'm glad to be here.
I love the title of your book because so many women, myself included, have been on the performance treadmill. Is that why you wrote the book?
It is why I wrote the book. I tell you what, walking on that treadmill and in some ways running on that treadmill, mm-hmm. what I've done for a lot of life can totally wear you out. So this book was stirring in my heart for many years before I finally got to the place where I just felt like I just got to get this thing out, even if nobody else feels this way. And I was kind of afraid nobody else would, but I have since discovered that that is not the case.
I think that's a good point. You have to be sick and tired of being sick and tired. And before that occurs, we're not ready to really consider another way. We've got to be totally convinced that all this good girl stuff is totally useless, and then we can be open to doing something different.
Yeah, as long as it works, mm-hmm. then what's the point of doing something different?
Right.
Right. But I think deep down, a lot of us just know that it's not working, but it can go on for a really long time because so often everybody else thinks it is working, mm-hmm. and so we sort of convince ourselves that it is.
Yeah, because we're hiding behind the mask. Being a good girl is about performance, and performance always has a payoff. It meets our needs. Value, worth, acceptance, security, adequacy. But those are only momentary fixes. The moment we step off the performance treadmill, then we're back to feeling empty and undone again. So what's the answer?
What's the answer? That's a great question, Rita.
Is there an answer, Emily?
We all like to know, right? Here's what I've discovered, and this has helped me. The answer is found in actually changing the question from what am I supposed to do to who am I going to believe? I think as good girls and as women, and especially as women in the church, we are desperate to do the right thing. And maybe even a lot of us who grew up not in the church, a lot of people who grew up not doing the right thing, now that we're grown up, now that we know God, we feel like we have some time to make up for. That so now we have to make up for doing all those wrong things or those mistakes that we've made or those regrets that we have. And so we have to do the right thing. And if we could just, we think if we could just find the answer to, what am I supposed to do? Then all will be well. But really, I think that Jesus changes his question in the Bible when he says, this is the work of God, that you believe in the one he has sent. And so changing that question to what am I going to believe, it's a little more cloudy in some ways, and it's not super bullet pointy. I can't outline it, but I think that's right where God meets us and where we have to depend on him for living his life.
Mm-hmm. And doing the right thing has a set of beliefs attached to that. So, again, it goes back to meeting our needs. If I do the right thing, if I'm the good girl, then I'll get the pats on the back. I'll get my needs for adequacy and acceptance and value and worth met. How does the fear that lies behind these masks that we wear drive us?
You know, the Bible talks about how perfect love drives out fear. And I've heard someone say that the opposite is actually also true, that that fear drives out the love. And so when we don't know that we're loved, then the fear is going to win. And so all the things that I'm doing are going to be motivated not by love and not by the love that I have been given, but the fear that I'm so afraid of, that I'm going to be doing something wrong or that I myself am wrong. And so we're hopelessly afraid of messing up, and I think that fear really pushes us around to try to keep us from doing that. And so we're sort of walking around, eyes closed, looking at ourselves, trying to figure out how to live, and fear is pushy. But there's a version of that verse in Ephesians that talks about how God will do immeasurably more than all we ask. And it also says, there's a place that says that God works within us. His spirit works gently within us. And fear pushes and shoves, but God's spirit works within us. And it's such a different image of him working within us and gently and not showing us all at once who we need to be or how we need to trust, but sort of a one step at a time, moment by moment trust rather than this, let me jerk you around and show you how wrong you are. You know, it's just, I just don't think he works that way. I think a lot of us see him that way, but I don't think that's the God of the Bible.
Yeah, wearing the masks is an outflow of us trying to protect ourselves from pain and rejection, don't you think?
I think it is. I think the mask it builds a wall between you and me to where I can control what goes on over here, and I don't have to let you into it.
Mm-hmm. Because if you really knew me, you might reject me or not think I was perfect.
Yeah, doesn't everybody say that? You know, it's like we always think that on the inside, but sometimes it's scary to admit that. But I think that's just a real human condition that we all sort of can resonate with in some form or another.
Can you give us some examples of what the masks look like? Some of the things you talked about in the book.
Sure. I can't remember a time when I wasn't a good girl. I mean, I've messed up, I've had things, but as far as like on purpose, being rebellious, that kind of thing, I was the kind of kid that all of my friends' moms really liked for them to hang out with because I wasn't going to get them into trouble. And that's not a bad thing, but there were times when my mask looked like, I'm fine, how are you? They looked like, if there's something that needs to be done, I'm going to be the one to do it. Not necessarily because I'm motivated out of my own giftedness or out of love for you, but because I feel obligated. I felt responsible. I felt like I sort of put the world on my shoulders and then figured that, if anybody's going to do this, it's going to be me, that type of thing.
Were you a people pleaser?
You think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I definitely was. I've talked to a lot of women who struggle with this, and one thing that not all women who say, yeah, I struggle with that good girl, a lot of them say, you know, but I don't have the people-pleasing part. And I envy those women because I do, and I grew up in a home with an alcoholic dad, and I think that is a common theme among people who grew up in a home with a parent who's addicted. It's either one of two ways a lot of times. One sibling might go off and rebel and think, well, I can't be perfect, so I'm not even going to try. And mm-hmm. they go, and I was sort of the opposite. I was like, well, I can't be perfect, but I'm going to try harder, and I want to make sure everything's okay. And so that was sort of my role in the family.
Sure. You decided you were going to be the responsible one, the fixer, the caretaker, all of that, the rescuer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, textbook, I tell you what. But the trouble with it, and here's the thing that in the church, the trouble with that is that looks great. And those are the people that we want to volunteer at VBS. And those are the women who volunteer for Sunday school. And we're afraid, we don't want to call them out because A, we don't see anything wrong with it. And B, if we do, then what if they don't volunteer anymore? So the church kind of praises it, maybe inadvertently or not really meaning to and not knowing what it is they're patting you on the back for. But I think what it comes down to is a Christianity without Christ. It's a belief system that is all built around me and what I can do for you and how I can save myself and how... And then it comes down to, grace is for sinners, right? But good girls don't need grace, do we? And that's so not the gospel.
So then some of your personal masks were people-pleasing, trying harder, avoiding conflict, being responsible, staying busy, being fine.
Being fine, being a servant in some respects, sometimes even being indifferent. Sometimes indifference could be a mask to cover up any anger or any hurt. So it's like I would have a mask of, well, that doesn't bother me. I'm a, you know, water off a duck's back. That's me. I'm laid back. And in a lot of ways, I am a laid back kind of girl, I think naturally. But there are times when things do bother and things have hurt. But I've been afraid to say those things for fear of what might happen.
Okay, so it was fear of rejection by others? Others won't like me?
Yeah, fear of rejection, fear of having my own opinion, not really knowing what my own opinion was, because it was scary in some ways when I was younger to have an opinion. I was afraid, because an opinion means you're taking a stand, and taking a stand means somebody else could take a stand against you. And there was that internal feeling of that would be, if we disagree, then maybe that means you're rejecting me.
Absolutely.
And I didn't know how to handle that.
Right. Absolutely. So why do good girls hide behind fine then? Because they're afraid to be vulnerable? They're afraid to be rejected?
Yeah, I think all that. Who knows? I mean, I think there's lots of reasons why we might hide behind fine. Sometimes it's because we are afraid that if you see who I really am, like you said before, that maybe you wouldn't like me, or that maybe I'm just too much to handle. A lot of women say, I've heard women say this, and it's funny because it's a common theme, that I'm both too much and not enough all at the same time. And if I'm vulnerable with you, then you'll see that. And that's one reason. Another reason why we hide behind fine really might not have anything to do with being vulnerable or being open. Maybe we're fine with that, but we're just kind of lazy. You know, I've got three kids, and you walk into church and it's like, it takes a lot of energy to be not fine. It takes
right.
a lot of energy to let you in to my life. And, you know, I've got a husband and my kids, and it's like you start to do your life, or even if you're not married, if you're working or if you're going to school, it gets to be just you've got your thing, and all these balls are in the air. And if you stop and take time to really figure out what's going on with you, all those balls might fall. And it would just take too much energy to get it back up there in the air and start doing life again. So I think those are two reasons why we hide. I'm sure there's a thousand more that somebody might come up with.
Well, I think part of, you know, my heart for women is checking the pulse on the condition of their hearts. And I think so often we don't do that. And so the losses in our lives, even the ones that we deem insignificant, begin to pile up and pile up like a stack of unpaid bills until one day we wake up and wonder the bottom's dropped out of our life. So we really need to at least be able to be vulnerable or unfine to a few select people in our lives.
Yeah, and we've all met people who are unfine all the time to everyone. And I think there's something there that's lacking. There's a need there that's not being met, that people are looking for people to meet that need. And for those people, or for people who are always fine, it all comes down to Jesus. It comes down to I trusting him with myself and with my whole heart to be vulnerable to him, and then allowing him and trusting him to lead me into being vulnerable with people. And this whole vulnerability thing, I mean, it's not another thing to put on our list. Oh, now I need to figure out how to be vulnerable. No, it's learning how to believe God that he is with me in this moment, no matter what this moment might bring. And, and it might bring messy, and it might bring beauty, and it might bring joy, and it might bring brokenness. But just being honest about what is, and maybe inviting a few people to be and to sit with me in that reality.
Yeah. Masks aren't always worn to cover up the bad stuff. The good girl mask is worn so that we can get those pats on the back, like I said, and, you know, all those things that we crave. Can you talk a little bit about how you did that?
I made great grades in school, which is a good thing. And when I would get those pats on the back, a lot of times, instead of interpreting it as, oh, that's awesome, they're proud of me, I did a good job, somewhere in my kid brain, I turned it into, that's what they expect of me from now on, and I got to keep it up. It wasn't conscious, it was sort of an underlying thing. But it was there, and it sort of built on something innocent of making good grades and being a good friend, to, as I grew up and went to college, and Bible college, mind you, to start with.
Of course.
as all good girls do.
Right.
No. But I went to college and kind of thought, I mean, well, being in Bible college, for example, I sort of thought that now I was going to be surrounded by a bunch of people who were not perfect, because nobody's perfect, but a lot of people, I had an expectation of how people were going to be. And when they weren't that way, when they didn't meet my expectations, there was a mask of, in some ways, well, maybe I'm better than they are because I'm able to follow all these Bible college rules and I'm doing a great job. And yeah, I have some things on the inside that I probably wouldn't want anybody to know, but I'm not as bad as so-and-so. Mm. And so it became maybe a mask of judgment or a mask of self-righteousness. But then at the same time, it would twist, because when I would mess up, or when I would do something that was hurtful to someone or something that didn't live up to the standard that I had set for myself, then I would think, woe is me. I can't believe I did that. I'm such a horrible person. It was never, my reactions to my messing up was never proportional to the mess up. It was always like, I was way high or I was way low, because my salvation, I hate to say it that way, but in my mind, I knew it was saved by faith, but then I kind of thought, okay, from here on out, though, I got to work hard to keep it up.
Yeah, to get God to like me a little bit better.
Yeah, I didn't think I could lose it. I knew God loved me, but a friend of mine said, I knew God loved me. She said this to me once, but I thought he would love me more if I was good. Mm. And I think I thought that too. I never read that in the Bible because it's not there, but somehow that was my theology.
So you don't know where that belief came from? I mean, was that something that was...
I can't point to it. Nobody ever said that. I had great parents, you know, like I said. My dad was an alcoholic growing up, but he is not. He's sober now. He's been sober for 25 years, which is awesome. But growing up, but they were loving parents. They were supportive, and Mom went to church, and she loved Jesus, and she taught us about Jesus. And so I can't point to a time except for just sort of my own personality, sort of the way I was bent. And there were, you know, I'm sure there were things in life. I remember going under the bridge once when I was a kid with my sister. Now, to you, maybe like, so what, you went under the bridge. But we weren't allowed to go under the bridge. Mom didn't want us to go under the bridge. It was evidently like this dangerous place in our neighborhood that we weren't allowed to go to. And we did it one day. And I hate the fact that I can't remember what happened under there. Like, I remember nothing about it. But all I remember is I broke the rules, and now I'm bad. And I felt so guilty and ashamed. It wasn't just guilt, because guilt is right. Like, yeah, you know what? You broke the rules. Go tell your mom. But I didn't just feel guilt. I felt shame. And the shame kind of festers, and then you start to feel ashamed of yourself. And instead of running to confess, we hide. And that's what I did.
Absolutely.
And so I finally didn't take it anymore. And I told my mom, of course, my sister's across the room, like sending bullets into the back of my head with her stare, because she was not the same bent as I was. And she was like, just forget about it. Why do you have to tell Mom? And, of course, she was older. So, you know, she got in trouble probably more than I did. Poor thing. But it illustrates the point of when you're good and you follow the rules, and then when you don't, when your whole life is based on a reputation of following the rules and being a good girl, and then you don't, it's sort of like you're always just one bad decision away from an identity crisis. And that's what would happen anytime I messed up in life. And I think that's what happens with a lot of us. And so instead of just guilt, if we just felt guilt, we'd run to the Lord and say, Lord, I confess. But we don't. We feel guilt, and then we feel shame. And guilt causes us to confess and to know that we're wrong, but shame pushes us into hiding and to fear and maybe even to blame. Like, well, it's because of this, it's because of that. And it's all part of the fall, and we're all messed up, but the quicker we can admit that, the better off we're going to be.
Mm-hmm. You know, just knowing. Yeah, the more freedom we can walk in. I think the whole idea behind this that's so important is that these core belief systems that we develop about self, God, and the world around us really drive our behavior. So in other words, if I believe I did something wrong or broke a rule, and then I translate into I'm bad, then I live out of that belief, and I'm bad. And so for you, I mean, it was a small thing, but for other people, things that really become shameful, that's really hard to break out of.
It is really hard to break out of. And here is the unbelievable, wild, scandalous truth of the gospel, is that it takes the same redemption to save those of us who have done things that might look kind of vanilla sins to those of us who have done things that don't look so vanilla.
Yes.
And I think that is the struggle of the good girl, is because it doesn't seem fair. Like, well, I'm not as bad as, but the truth is, yes, you are.
Mm-hmm.
By yourself and on your own without Jesus, you are. And we all are. We all fall short. But the beautiful truth of the gospel of grace is that there are no corners. There are no boundaries. There's no trophy. We can't earn it. We can't win it. It's a free gift. We receive it, and we're all on level ground.
Yeah, you illustrate this whole thing beautifully, I think, in Lucy's story about how one event, one belief can shape your life's trajectory. So Lucy believed that her dad didn't want her, and that shaped lie number one. She was worthless. And because she felt worthless, she coped by doing whatever she could to get that need for value and love and security met. Then lie number two took root because Lucy learned that if she performed well, people would love and accept her. And then her mother got sick, and Lucy was left to take care of herself. And her lie number three, Others won't be there for me, and I can only depend on myself. So she grew up holding on to this rigid, tight set of beliefs, and she chose to hide her true self. So talk about how she was set free. I know it was an imaginary story, but it's very relevant to most of us out there.
It's actually not an imaginary story. It's actually a person I know in real life.
Okay.
And she was gracious enough to share her story and to let me put it in the book. Her name's not Lucy, though, by the
okay.
way, for anyone. So it's an imaginary
okay.
name. But Lucy, here's the thing about her. Her life was a wreck as far as her growing up, her parents' life, the whole thing. It was brokenness in their family. Lucy could have gone down a really dark road. And she instead chose to go down the road of performance, which in some ways kept her safe from certain things like teenage pregnancy, jail, drugs, those type of things, running away. She didn't do those things. Instead, she went down a different dark road, and that was the road of performance and of I have to find a way to be valuable, because that's what we all have to find a way to be valuable.
Mm-hmm.
We all just choose different roads. And Lucy's road looked really good on the outside. Valedictorian, the best of the best, the smartest girl in the room. I mean, she's a great, fun girl. And people, in a way, they like her, but almost like at a distance, because it's like, I really like her, but I can't touch her because I can't relate to her because she's so...
Perfect.
Good. So perfect. But here's the thing about Lucy is we all went on a beach retreat together. She and I and some other friends, and one of the girls in our group was like, you know, we know all about us, because Lucy's a great listener, a great friend. We know about you, but we don't really know much about you. Would you kind of tell us more about your story? So she did, and in the image of wanting to be a good friend, because that's what good girls do, we're good friends, right? She sort of answered some of our questions, but in the process of her sharing her story that night and opening up, something happened, and I know that the Lord was in that, and it was just her time to kind of take off some of those masks, but she opened up and let us in.
Mm.
And in letting us in, we all were sort of standing on that common ground, like, wow, you've had a really tough life, and you're really showing us what that looks like. And now, granted, she told me later, she was like, I feel like some of those masks were ripped off, and now I'm standing bare, and I don't know who I am anymore. But that was the beginning, and I think that can be a really scary place, because it's like, oh no, now I'm out of hiding, and I'm exposed, so what do I do? But here's the truth of it, and the beautiful truth of it, and I hope this is communicated in the book, is that we all have to hide, but now it's no longer hiding behind my girl-made mask. Now it's hiding in the safety of Christ.
Mm.
And sometimes people, that seems too abstract and doesn't make sense, and even though this hiding I'm hiding in behind my girl-made places might not be comfortable, at least it's familiar and it's mine and I have control over it. But the Bible says that our lives are now hidden in Christ, and I am learning what that actually means day to day. And I tell you what, it's a lot better to hide in Him than hide behind my girl-made places, because those places really aren't really all that safe.
No, they're not. And they're counterfeit. They don't supply what we really need. In the moment they might, but in the end, we really aren't getting what we need. We have to jump back on the treadmill, because
you have
every
to keep
time,
going, right?
Yes.
You have to keep doing it, and it never is enough.
No,
it's never enough.
Yeah, and the moment we step off, then we're really only as good as our last performance.
Yeah, I love the way you said that. That's perfect.
So, in order to be authentic, then we have to tell our story to someone, because the telling of our story begins a different journey for us, like with Lucy.
I tell you what, I am a big believer in the power of story,
mm-hmm.
and in the power of writing our own stories, and knowing that. Look, God didn't write your story in a book, and now you have to figure out what your lines are. He's with you, and He's in us, and we're writing our story together, and part of it's already been written, and I think there's power in telling it, and in finding, because sometimes in telling it, then we can look back and see, oh, that's where God was. My friend Mary DeMuth wrote a book called 10 Places,
mm-hmm.
and she tells her story, and it's a fantastic book, but she talks about how in the telling of her story, she can look back and see those thin places where the line between heaven and earth was made thin, and God showed up in these very hurtful, broken places in her life, but that it's in the telling of our stories is sometimes the only way we can see where He was, and that He was there, and that we can invite Him in, and that we're really not alone after all.
And the telling of our story helps us to be known and to know. And that's
huge.
And
to know. Mm-hmm. And to know.
Okay, so you talked about your feelings of inadequacy when your husband returned home from a missions trip. You said you felt insignificant because you were just a stay-at-home mom. But you felt guilty about feeling that way. And I think it's important because what we do is we let the enemy sidetrack us by using guilt instead of addressing the real issue. I do feel this way. I do believe this. And I need to unpack that and see what it's about. Otherwise, don't you think we're fighting the wrong battle and we're destined to stay stuck in those feelings because they're going to resurface again and again?
It's like chasing your own tail. And it's never like, you know, like a dog chasing his tail. It does. It keeps us distracted from the real issue. And I think a lot of times good girls are just afraid of those raw emotions. And we have categorized our emotions into positive and negative when I don't think the Bible does that. I mean, if you read the Psalms, I mean, David is like all over the place. He talks about like doing horrible things to the children of his enemies. And he tells it to God, like in a prayer. It's like, what? Are you kidding me? I don't think those verses are not like instructive, but they are very telling. And they show us, look, here's a person who God said was after his own heart. And here is his innermost thoughts on paper for us to read so many years later. And here he is not afraid to be honest about what's really going on. I think the emotions are neutral. It's bad, good, you know, hurt, worried, happy, sad, joyful, but this isn't okay to feel. Yeah, and it's like, okay, well, who's God then? You or God? Because as long as I'm God, I'm going to hide certain things and show certain things. And then I become this fragmented person instead of a person who, you know, Colossians says that he holds all things together. And I have to trust that he can hold me together even when it feels like I'm falling apart. And instead of being this fragmented person that, well, this is okay to be and this is not okay to be. No, I'm a whole person, and he has made me a whole person. And because of him, all those things, all those colors can come together. And I can offer them up to him and be who I am and what I am and trust that he's going to bring something really beautiful out of it.
Mm-hmm. Emily, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. I could talk to you all day on this. I love the book. Love what you're doing. Thank you for joining us and sharing what's on your heart and the vision God's given you for women.
I had a big hole in my heart, and I was looking.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.